Concession number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 26.
Mr. Ray, reel 26. We were talking about the move forward into the jungle.
Yes.
Bamboo jungle, you were telling me. Mainly unopposed at this at the time. You hadn't met the Japanese
not
yet.
Not quite.
About how far had you moved forward? I mean, was it a quick advance, or what was going on?
Well, we gradually moved forward slowly to about perhaps half a mile to a mile. That depending on the reports from the the patrols, we knew we could advance as far as the clearance of the area where we'd patrolled, right? And we'd go and consolidate there for a time. It's by company, you see. We didn't all go in like in one main stream, because it could happen that A company, my company in particular, could bump into a small detachment of Japanese and be pinned down there for a while, you see, and it might be clear. B company might have no resistance at all. So that's how it happened, because the Japanese, they've been in the jungle longer than we had been anyway, because they'd travel right up from Java and all right through. And they adapted to jungle warfare better than we were at the time. We were just newcomers, you see. So we had to move block by block, simply by using always patrolling. Patrol, patrol, patrol. If A company had any patrols out, B company had them out, and so forth, right to the extreme end. So we were, our patrols were covering a very large area.
Now, did the patrols just stick to the tracks? What I mean is, couldn't the Japanese be between the tracks? Or was that just
not
impassable?
Well, not possibly, because when you get away from the tracks, it's all thick bamboo. So thick and thin bamboo, right up to the top of the razorback hills. More like small mountains than hills, you know.
So if you weren't on a track or in a clearing... Yeah. You couldn't conceal yourself.
If you were on a track, you knew you were on a track that would lead to a village, for a start, because the natives made all the tracks, you see.
How wide would what would a track look like?
Well, a track would only be about 2 feet, 6 to 3 feet wide. That's the widest part. Because they could only travel in single file, for a start. Either side, you had bamboo.
And how thick was the bamboo?
Well, it varied. Sometimes the bamboo could be old, as thick as a drinking mug. That's about, 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter. Sometimes as thin as a walking stick, young bamboo.
And how much of a gap between separate bamboo shoots or trees?
Well, it varied. Sometimes it was thick, you had to push your way through. Sometimes it was, you could ease your way through. But it was always so tall, you know what I mean? It used to darken the paths, the paths anyway. It used to blot out the sunlight, it was that thick.
What about vegetation, other vegetation?
Well, you got that further down.
But yes. What about the floor covering? Was it just mud or was it
hard baked clay?
No sort of, as we'd expect in it, no grass or anything?
No, it was bare.
So it's just...
Yeah, yeah. Now...
And couldn't the sort of Japanese just get a little to one side of their path and then ambush you? Because you seem very vulnerable to ambush.
Well, our Africans were very, very cautious. some of them were good trackers, were coming from their country, you know what I mean? They were, and they could move around as silently as a cat, and they could tell anywhere if there was anything there. As a matter of fact, as time grew on in Burma, my instincts were very, very sharp, and to the least crack of a twig, the least sixth sense could tell you there was something in that area. Why, I don't know. Perhaps there might have been.
So you never were ambushed at that stage?
No. No. Well, I'll tell you why, Pete. You're on the track. If anything happened, if one of my scouts came back, you'd find the Japanese weren't amongst bamboo, because you couldn't see the aim correctly in bamboo. It was so thick. If you went from one side to the other, and anybody was dodging about, you couldn't get a direct aim, Pete.
Your scouts would just be like a point, would they? Ahead of you. They'd stay on the path, or just how far ahead?
Oh, for about 30, 40 yards. And if there's anything there, you put his hand up and he'd point.
And you wouldn't use a BNCO for that. You'd use an experienced African tracker.
Yes. And you could kneel one side and peer about, and then go forward, and then he'd, say, come on, we're all right. And if he say anything at the front, he'd put his hand up. And,
So the patrols, if the tracks went to the villages, then perforce you'd be going to the villages as well. I mean, a patrol would go around.
And before the villages, the bamboo thins out. It thins out around the area of the villages. Now, if that village hadn't been patrolled, and you go into this village and hadn't been patrolled, then you took utter precautions. You went in there very, very gradually, because there could be a Japanese platoon or a section in there waiting for somebody to come down, like my scout, see? And you should approach very, very carefully and make sure there were no Japs in that village. But if there were Japs, which I'll tell you later, then all hell would let loose.
So at this stage, though, when you'd still approach the villages very cautiously, but they'd just be the villages. Yeah. The villages were usually occupied, were they?
Yes. Yes, they're occupied.
And then...
You'd find...
So you put... Sorry, carry on.
A village is always built where there's a chong. Well, that's a stream, because that's a water supply. And that water supply could be almost encircling the piece of ground that the little huts were built on, high ground, like a little plateau, not a large area, about, 5 or 6 bamboo huts, and a one for the headman or something of that purpose. But they always were there where there's plenty of water. Well,
so you mentioned about what you'd ask them. Now, when you'd done a patrol, would you go back by the same path, or would you try and find a route by other paths?
Well, I think we'd go back the same way.
Were there a lot of these paths? Or
yes, interwoven. Oh, yes, network of them, yes.
And would you have any...
We'd never think about...
Were they all maintained, or would you have to clear your way?
Well, they were maintained by the villagers themselves, by constant use. If a track wasn't used for about 3 or 4 weeks or to a month, it was overgrown. Vegetation used to grow that quick.
Bamboo.
And the creepers and grass coming from the undergrowth. That's how sharp it used to grow, the vegetation.
Did you have anything to help you?
We used to have a machete if you wanted to chop bamboo down to make clearings or anything like that, Very handy, they were good too. We used to carry one on a, and a sheath. Each of us had one.
So you were patrolling like this. And how long would a patrol take?
Well, a good patrol would last about 2.5 to 4 hours. So we're going well ahead. Yeah.
And then, how would the battalion advance? Would it go in single file, or the company more to the point, perhaps? Would it go down in single file down one path, or would it sort of go down all the paths?
Well,
you know, that led that way.
Well, you send a platoon in, put platoon up first. And if there's any large clearings up on the hillsides where the bamboo was very sparse, you cut plenty of visibility around, use a matchet and dig in on the hillside, looking down on the village. We never occupy a village.
Why not?
Well, it kept the villagers happy by having the troops out of it. And any Japs that came into it, we could observe it, same as the Japs do to us. They did exactly the same.
So they wouldn't actually occupy the village?
No, no way. Oh, no. That was strictly verboten. We used to get in a position where we could observe the village, keep it on observation, and the villagers are very helpful in some cases. Later on I'll mention one or two facts as I get further down in Burma, into Burma on our area. The villagers, most of them had seen Japanese, because the Japanese at that time, they were more or less partly not on the offensive, the defensive and withdrawal, because they're getting a hell of a thumping, you know what I mean, the Japs, later on. As we proceeded further down, we had to, the brigade had to relieve the 5th Indian Division to go on the other side, Coimbra and Imphal. And our 2nd Battalion was up there at Coimbra or Imphal, yes. But I think about 3,000 Japs made a push up that side and up on the Coimbra and Imphal side, that's going on to Assam, you know, up on the top side to come into a Japs invasion, coming to that side of India to occupy it. Fortunately, we held them and drove them back. There was a lot of fighting took place up in that area. We did eventually bump into one or two large parties of Japanese who wanted to make a final push.
Right. So, but during this early stage, the villagers had seen the Japanese, but they'd gone back by then.
That's right, yeah. You can understand the airstrikes that took place and the Japanese retreating, and they knew that some heavy forces coming down to engage them, and they concentrated all their forces up on the Imphal side. So the forces they had left up the western coastal area and the Kaladan zone, Kaladan River, because we went down by the Kaladan. Particularly, we went down the Kaladan.
That's where you were moving towards, or down?
That's where we were advancing to.
So, what's the next thing you remember for you then? You appeared a patrol in and moving forward.
Well, some of the patrols in the company on my left, a B company, I think it was Sergeant De Silva, he took a patrol out and he lost 4 men. He bumped the Japanese. So we concentrated on that area where the Japanese were and knocked hell out of them and got them on the retreat. Them on the retreat.
What happened to you during that? Did you meet any during?
Not just then, no. And we our first engagement, I think, was...
I'll come. What would you do when you weren't patrolling then? Just be occupying these trenches above a village?
Consolidating and making sure that if there was any attack, we had an advantage position. Oh, yes.
What about the whole life in the jungle? I mean, what was it like living there? I mean, could you get your rations up properly?
Well, you used to get air supplied by air.
What would they give you? What would you get?
Well, we got the usual biscuits, bully beef. We got a lot of tinned soup, jam, bits of things like that that we never had, you know. And that was quite tinned beetroot, tinned potatoes, tinned peas, dehydrated mutton from Australia. And you could make a meal when you could. At the time.
And were your meals made? What basis were they? The cookhouse? Or
no, we made our own. No, we did our own where we were.
So your quartermaster sergeant would deliver it out to what level? Would we go? Well, would you go to the section or to the?
It was brought to the company first. The CQMS, he would send it out to each platoon in the company. He'd come up, we knew the rations, I could send a couple of men down, you know, it's all right, and he'd bring the rations up. But I think there's a very amusing incident on this one, Peter. The soup, you get oxtail, beef soup, mixed vegetable soup. It's more, mainly oxtail and beef, not so much the tins of veg, but... It was self-eating soup. the can itself was exactly a tin can of soup like the Heinz. I think it was no labels on. It just said, told you the name of the soup. All brown glazed tin. In the top, built in. There was a heating self-heater. Something like a... Well, can you explain? You know, heat in a tank, electric heater in a tank, immersion. It was like an immersion heater. Yeah. Identical, a miniature one. And on the top, there's a little black wick flattened over. And there's a piece of waterproof tape on the top, stopping from getting damp. Now, when you took that tape off, on this top side, it was like a brassard, and you rubbed the wick like that, it used to fuse. It used to go straight down into the chemicals, into the immersion heater. And in less than a minute, you should be boiling. But the thing is this, the trick was, you had to put a hole in where the rim was. Two holes, one, two, with a jackknife. Well...
Can you just explain why, sorry?
If you didn't, you'd get the soup, but you'd get it all over in your face, scalding soup. It's a burst.
Because as it expanded.
Yes. Now, we've got the African NCOs. They've got one tin. Right, that's a tin of soup. Come round, fellas. Gather round. Now, this be heating himself. No fire. No cutting the tin with jackknife. You all had a jackknife. No. One hole there, one hole there. You do a proper demonstration. And you lift, take the piece off the top like that. Like that, hold him, and lift the wick up a bit, then get the tape, and then pass it across, quick two or three times. You see a little light flicker, and then smoke, and then it goes down. Watch. And then, less than a minute, you see the bubbles coming out the holes. Yeah, girl. Mess tin. Get a piece of cloth. Get the tin and pour it into the mess tin. And they're all steaming. Ah, magic. Ah, magic. No. It was magic to them. I'd never seen self-eating soup either. Anyway, all right. You click soup and go back to the men, and you show the men, like I show you, how to do this one, this fella. Understand? Ah, yes. And so, wait a minute, come back. Sergeant Isaka, come here. Tin. You do one. Right? He did it. Exactly. Mess tin, the soup. You know now? Asa. It took them back. Well, you could tell when they're having soup. There were more skulls. You could hear. Bop, 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 bop. Oh! Shouts went up. Hot soup all over, you know. Oh dear. But we still carried on with it till, regardless of scalded tabble or something like that, or wherever the soup managed to explode onto them, you know, on the clothes and things, because they might have been looking over the top, watching it.
So they didn't put the holes in?
They didn't put the holes in, you see.
Why not?
Eh?
Why not?
Because they hadn't been shown properly. That's why you... Peter, during warfare, might say, you can't go around the company and stamping holes in each tin for each man, can you, honestly? Now that's out of the question.
So the African NCOs
were responsible. They had been shown. They'd seen the demonstration. You know, they were, talk about kicking the uptake, but I think they were so ravenous they forgot to put the holes in. And that was the whole thing in a nutshell, you see. Now, the other tins were all right, because they could use the can opener.
The bully beef tins.
Well, that had a self key on, you see. That they couldn't lose that one. They could take that one off. And they get the mess tin, and they get beetroot, and they get jam and all sorts in, and start eating it. Oh, if we find chop, it'll be fine. Good chop, lovely.
They mixed it together in a way you wouldn't.
No, because they'd never seen beetroot any for a start, and they'd never seen jam.
So they didn't have our sort of preconceived notions of
the way to eat it. No, they knew how to eat biscuits and bully beef. Now, the dehydrated mutton, Peter, you could take a handful, get a mess tin, and put it in the water, just in your hand. Like that, put it in the water, and heat it over a fire, and used to boil up, and it used to thicken. And just like eating mutton, all you had to do was get a salt tablet and put your salt in. See, and it was all right, it was a good meal. And tinned potatoes, and carrot, string beans. Oh, you could make a good meal.
All in tins. What about the dehydrated mutton? Was that in bags or was that in tins?
That was in sealed cartons, wax cartons. Then later on, Peter, we got what they call American K rations. They were packs, long oblong packs, and there was a meal in there. One pack, one meal. There was bouillon powder that was like for soup. There were biscuits. And then like strips of dried meat, all individually wrapped, and you could put them in the mess tin, and they would immediately come into meat and bouillon. You could put that in, it was good as gravy, you or you could have that as a soup. There's cigarettes, about five cigarettes in a packet. There's a little carton of matches, a little book form matches. There's chewing gum in. That was the pack, and long biscuits. There's some sweet and some oatmeal. That constituted the pack, and a very light. You could carry them.
Did you prefer them?
Oh, yes, they're all right, because they're handy, you see.
You thought they were better than the British rations?
Well, it was only for one meal. I mean, if you had one meal on the British rations, that would last you a long time, because you had the solids, you see.
So they were a nice change, you
know? It was, yes.
The K rations, yeah. Anything else? What about your water supply, or tea, or whatever you drank?
Oh, well, we always managed to get our water supply, because there's always chongs where we get the water.
What about water purification?
We had tablets, a blue and a white one.
What was the difference?
That was to make sure that you did drink water. You put the white one in, and the white one in for about 5 minutes, then you drop the blue one in.
Do you know what they were?
They had a name anyway, but I forget now.
But to you, it's just something you did. And about how, one tablet to how much water?
Quart bottle. You used to put them in a water bottle and then shake it, and it used to dissolve quickly. Leave it for 5 minutes, and it was purified.
And did it affect the taste?
Yes, it did. It had a peculiar taste, but you didn't really mind the taste, because you knew what it was, and you took it to get intake of water, you see. It wasn't disagreeable. You could drink it all right, but it had a taste, a tongue.
But people make tea, I mean.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's what they
use. Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
What about fires? I mean,
the use of fires, daytime only. Use yellow dead bamboo, small amounts of it, because when you burn that fuel, it doesn't smoke, because of a nice steady flame. That's a vent smoke going up all over the place. You see, Japs seeing smoke in the jungles, with different places like that. They know it's occupied by the foe. So if you, during the daytime, make an indentation in the ground, you match it. Make a little fire in there, let it get nice and hot. You could hold a mess tin over like that and heat it. As soon as it got hot, just knock the earth in, the fire went out. Or a cup of char. Freddie West, he was a motor platoon sergeant. When we were in a harbour, that's called Close Harbour, and going out on patrols, went through his area, the main area, you know, the front. And Freddie, he would always have a cup of tea ready for any patrols going out and coming in. He was the platoon sergeant, had a big ginger beard and moustache. And he was a lion tamer in Civvy Street, Freddie. And he went into the army, the outbreak of the war. And he had a little piece of cardboard up. Fred's Tea Shop. Fred's Tea Shop.
Would that be for the African troops as well?
No, just for us.
So where would you sleep at night? Would you have a little tent, or would you just be in the trench or wherever?
Anywhere. The place we dug, that was our sleeping hole. Yeah. Bamboo roots sticking in your back all the time, just a ground sheet down, and one blanket, and we shield with lightweight blankets, dark green, to blend in with the vegetation.
Were you warm enough, I presume, at night?
Sometimes, but pretty uncomfortable lying on bamboo roots, because they're like metal. chopping and all the tough. You chop as much as you want it out, like, but it's always uncomfortable. But after having a heavy day out on patrols or other things, you're ready for a kip, but you always had somebody awake, on guard, all the time, changing.